Welcome to today's episode of Engineering Innovations, the official podcast of Purdue University's Elmore Family School of Electrical and Computer Engineering, where we dive into groundbreaking research and innovative ideas shaping the future of technology. I'm your host, Kristen Malavenda, the Communications Director for the school. And my guest today is Dr. David Inouye, Assistant Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering here at Purdue. And we'll explore how he's pushing the boundaries of machine learning, why his work matters, and how his innovations could shape the future of industries. David, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
I'd like to start first with your path to engineering. How did you end up becoming an engineer?
Yeah, so I might have a slightly different path. I started out just being interested in computers and then interested in programming in high school. And then I ended up doing a 3-2 program, one at a liberal arts college, a Christian liberal arts college in North Georgia, and 2 years at Georgia Tech for the engineering degree in electrical and computer engineering. I ended up doing my PhD actually in computer science, and then I've kind of returned back to the electrical computer engineering department now. So that's how I ended up here.
And I mentioned that your research focuses on machine learning. Could you explain machine learning for someone who maybe doesn't know what it is and why it's so important to today's technology?
Yeah, so machine learning, the core behind it is just to be able to predict based on past experiences. Classically now, that's become a lot more just, you know, there's a data set that you have and you want to predict something based on, you know, basically an input and output pairs. The classic one has been something like classification. You want to classify images, cats and dogs in an image. It turns out to be very hard to describe mathematically what makes a cat and a dog.
But
it's far easier to just give examples of cats and dogs. So it's very easy for humans to, you know, label images themselves. But it's very hard to, you know, people had originally tried to say, you know, it has whiskers, it has this kind of fur, et cetera. It turns out very hard to describe that again, math, like kind of symbolically. But if you do use machine learning, it's kind of a data-driven way to elicit important semantic knowledge from people, their labeling of cats and dogs, and then learning a function to do that automatically. And then, of course, more recently, basically, they've taken this main idea and said, well, what if we just try to predict the next word, which is what a lot of large language models and things, it's called kind of like self-supervised learning. So there you don't have any explicit labels, but you're just trying to predict the next word. And it turns out doing that kind of thing, you know, this is some of the core of what the technologies are today.
So can you give us an overview of some of your research?
Yeah, so I work on trustworthy machine learning. So it's focusing on things like robustness to out of distribution. This means you trained on some internet images, but then people actually take images, you know, photos with their phones, and they're very different, for example. So these are kind of out of distribution for what you trained on. So that kind of robustness, everybody wants it, but it's actually turns out to be a pretty hard problem. Also things like fairness. So because of regulations now, people are asking for algorithmic fairness. They want decisions to be fair with respect to certain protected attributes like race or gender or age. And some of that is from the legal system. Like you have to prove that your algorithm can do this. And then another aspect is something like explainability. So people want explanations, partly because they don't trust algorithms when they should, and partly because they want to know when they shouldn't trust the algorithm. So they're looking for explanations, especially in high-stakes decisions like determining whether someone should get bail or you know, loan applications that are, you know, or admissions decisions. These are by legal precedent are not allowed to be unfair with respect to certain things. And so people are wondering, like, if you're going to make that decision, you should explain why. And usually, of course, humans making these decisions and they can give an explanation about why they made this decision. A judge can write a brief. But then when you know, when you're making automatic decisions, like loan approvals, you need to be able to often provide an explanation for why they were rejected to not get the loan.
So you mentioned a couple of real world issues, but are there some other real world problems that your research on machine learning is aiming to solve specifically?
So I tend to work on more of the core fundamentals of machine learning. So we tend to kind of use the high level motivations to, you know, more broadly. I don't have any more concrete than those examples, I guess.
So how do your machine learning algorithms differ from traditional models? And are they more efficient? Are they better at handling complex data? Or is it a mixture of everything?
Yeah, so one of the things I'm particularly excited about recently is combining causality ideas with machine learning. So a lot of the formal mathematical notions of causality have been developed in the statistics community, where it's usually thinking about like randomized controlled trials. What do you do under that situation? What kind of reasoning can you do in like kind of the medical space where very careful causal reasoning is required? And then of course, when you don't have completely randomized controlled trials, right, there's some bias. You're more likely to say treat people who are more ill because they don't have any other options. So your control group and your test group are not completely random, then you have to like handle carefully like the differences there. So there's that kind of community that's in the stats causal, very, very careful reasoning for studies and stuff. Really interesting deep thinking about causality there, philosophically as well as from a math point of view. And then on a machine learning side, people have tended to kind of ignore causality and say, if you can predict it, it doesn't matter. We're just aiming to predict well. We don't care what causes what. And now I think people are starting to realize like that may or may not be quite the right way to think about things, because causality actually matters especially when you start having the technology making decisions in the real world. Causality matters a lot. So I'm trying, and what do I mean by causality? There's probability in statistics. Mm-hmm. So there's things like correlation, dependency between various events that can lend things like being able to predict one event from the other.
Right.
So, but they can't answer certain questions. So standard probability in statistics can't mathematically answer certain questions like what causes what. So as a quick example, whether it's raining and whether people are using umbrellas, this is a highly correlated thing, right? Okay. It's highly predictive. If there's a bunch of umbrellas out, you can predict it's probably raining. If it's raining, people are likely going to be using a lot of umbrellas. So probability and statistics can do a lot to kind of be like, oh, these are predicted, these are correlated. You can do lots of analysis. But what it can't answer is which one causes which.
Okay.
So just by observing these two phenomena, just kind of on the outside, you can't answer the question. So what you need is what's called a notion of intervention. So an intervention thinks about what will change about the distributions when I intervene. This doesn't have to be something you can actually do. Sometimes it's just hypothetical. But in this example, right, if I force everybody on Purdue's campus to carry an umbrella, does it start raining? And you can think through this example and be like, no, it probably actually won't. This intervention by forcing, so intervention is about forcing something to be true.
Gotcha.
So I force everyone to take an umbrella, it won't cause rain. On the other hand, if I force it to rain, so I intervene and I say, I take all the fire hydrants and I spray water all over campus, making it kind of like rain, then people will use umbrellas. So then you know kind of that the rain causes the umbrella use. And if you don't have this notion of intervention, like if you're just saying, trying to predict, will umbrellas and, if I see umbrellas, is it raining, et cetera?
Right.
That's what machine learning has classically been used for, just this prediction problem. And it's very good at that.
Yeah.
But this notion of what happens when I change something,
right,
this notion of intervention, that's what causality really focuses on. And there's not really a mathematics. The mathematics for that is not really based in just simple probability and statistics. You need some kind of additional assumptions to get to that.
How did you end up interested in machine learning and then your specific research?
So this causality I've always just found fascinating, partly because it's initially quite confusing, but also seems like very useful for things like explainability and robustness in machine learning, which I'm interested in. And then I started working with Murat Kodrolu, who is a colleague here at Purdue ECE, who's really an expert in the causality, coming a little bit more from the statistics side. But he's also does machine learning. So we kind of are both at the intersection of these two a little bit. And so being able to work with him helped me to really understand some of the intricacies and the kind of nuances of causality that are not obvious when you first start.
So when you say robustness, how does that relate to machine learning?
Sure. So robustness, specifically here, I'm thinking about, this out of distribution robustness. So in many real world systems, there's some training data that they've collected, but it may be very different than the data they care about. So a couple examples. So you might say, if you want to generate images, you're going to collect a bunch of data, say on the internet. It turns out internet images are not like images you would see in normal life sometimes, because right. People only post images that look good. They only post images where the subject is often in the center of the image, et cetera.
Right.
So there's a lot of kind of biases in the data you might collect. And then you want to be able to actually deploy it on a phone where people are taking all these weird images that they would never post, but you still want to be able to use. That's a distribution shift. Another example in the medical domain is there's these types of like biopsies or x-rays, some sort of medical imaging that is a little different at every hospital. And so they have a little bit different equipment. It might even be pretty close, but they have slightly different staining methodologies, for example, when they're looking at cells. And they have slightly different microscopes. And I've even heard things like they trained something in material science on a microscope, and someone just happened to switch out the lens. It was just kind of a maintenance thing.
Yep.
And the entire system broke. Like it used to have like 90% accuracy. They switched out the lens because it was kind of wearing down or something. And then it went down to like 60% accuracy. So these relatively benign shifts even could have a big impact on the performance. And so there's a lot of interest in, well, when you do this small shift, humans don't have this problem, right? A human can be trained on one X-ray machine and use all X-ray machines out there. But machine learning systems don't have that property, usually, kind of by default. If they're trained on, three machines, they only work on those three machines. And if you use a new one, it might not work at all.
Yeah.
So that's the robustness aspect.
So people, when they talk about machine learning and AI, ethical considerations come up a lot. What are the ethical considerations that you think need to be addressed when doing this research?
That's a good question.
Thanks.
So I'd first caveat everything I say by saying I'm not a philosopher or ethicist. So I would say this is just some musings from a non-expert in those aspects. Like, I don't claim to be a social or ethical expert. I think the ethical considerations probably need to be contextualized within a specific application.
Right.
You can't say that this is always fair.
Yep.
Or this, fairness is probably a simple example. Or what's the best explanation in a scenario? It really, or what's like a correct or right explanation is going to differ based on the scenario. So I think you first have to contextualize within a very specific, narrow scenario and then decide. There are some technical things you can do. There's various notions of fairness, for example, and you can algorithmically enforce these different notions of fairness. But even deciding which notion is correct for your scenario is not trivial. It's actually much more challenging. And so I would lean towards more something like a process evaluation.
Yep.
So have people in practice think about what kind of effects do these have? But you kind of have to consider the whole system, because as you make decisions or use automated systems or these machine learning things, it can often change people's behavior. This is, again, a little bit where the causality thinking in a causal way is what we should, how we should think of ethical considerations sometimes. So for fairness, you might think, oh, if I force this, what will happen? But that might actually change the incentive mechanisms for people.
Gotcha.
And therefore, you kind of, you need to try to be able to predict and hypothesize about what these interventions will actually, if I change my like admissions policy, or I change how I do bail based on this new system, how will that shift the dynamics? And that's really hard. Like, you know, that's a whole much larger systems problem. And so I think, yeah, maybe I'm just saying it's not quite as simple to say, oh, this algorithm is fair or explainable. It's like, is it correctly fair or explainable in the way that you mean in a particular application?
That makes sense. So where do you see machine learning the next 5, 10, 20 years? What's the next big thing?
That's a good question. I think maybe, at least I wonder if one of the next big things will be a little bit more direct intervention in the world. So there's a little bit, you know, what we're good at now, even the large language model, ChatGPT type stuff.
Right.
That's, people are still a little cautious about, and I think appropriately cautious about actually deploying this to, say, make decisions. They, I think they appropriately pitch it as assistance. You still often have to validate the outputs.
Right.
It can be helpful, but ultimately it's like always has to go through a person who understands things to validate it. So it might help you draft your paper faster, but you still have to check and make sure everything's correct.
Right.
So I don't see it like immediately replacing people in a lot of situations, just making things more efficient.
Right. Making those initial steps easier.
Right.
So what about interdisciplinary research? I know here at Purdue, we're constantly working with other schools and other departments. How important is interdisciplinary work to what you do? And what are the most common other areas that you work with?
So I've been interested in certain science applications. Partly because I try not to compete with Google if I can, because they publish a lot of research and they do a lot of research themselves. And so, but they are often more interested in these, you know, bigger problems. But, you know, things like science, you often have, for example, a lot smaller data, a lot noisier data, a lot more complex data that is, like, even scientists don't know how to interpret. So it's different than, say, language, where, like, a human knows how to interpret it. So I've been interested in those. There are, often scientists are very interested in things like robustness and things like that. So that's one interdisciplinary area. I've also done some stuff on decentralized learning, and that one is often intersecting with distributed computing, embedded systems, edge devices, wireless networks. So I think as the technology becomes, as people begin to realize that we could actually use this technology more broadly, it'll become more and more interdisciplinary in a sense that there'll be a lot of interesting applications beyond kind of the standard ones.
So you have a lot of students, I assume, that work with you on your research. When you're considering whether or not you want to hire a student or use a student in your research, what qualities are you looking for in that person that make you think, yeah, this person's going to be a really good addition to my team?
Yeah, I like to, I tend to focus on, at least more recently, I want to focus on kind of both passion and a growth mindset, like willing to learn and change and adjust what they're doing based on feedback. So I think that's probably the most interesting part of being a mentor, is to see your students grow. And so having a sense of, even if you're not there yet, are you willing to change what you're doing to get and learn new things and right. learn new skills and learn how to the process differently, as well as just being, you know, passionate and excited about the research, wanting to, just loving to learn new things.
How do you help them understand? Because I'm sure you have hit over the years plenty of roadblocks in your research where you just kind of hit a standstill for a moment. How do you help your students learn to navigate around those roadblocks and not just be completely discouraged by them?
Yeah, so I think sometimes I can just provide some new ideas they can try. That's one thing. So your advisor obviously can help with some of that. The other one is in many cases, I'm realizing there you just don't have the expertise. So you got to go find someone.
Yeah.
And so sometimes a good part of research is finding the right people, the right other people to collaborate with. And this could be anywhere, in Purdue, it could be outside of Purdue, it could be a paper that you really liked and you want to reach out to the authors. So I would say sometimes, especially if you're starting a new area mm-hmm. where I might not even be an expert in it either, then, you often want to find an expert that
right.
that does have kind of a better intuition about the problems and can help. So that would probably be the other main advice is if you are roadblocked, try to find someone who might know it more deeply and help you kind of get out of that.
And look at it from a different perspective that maybe you wouldn't even consider.
Right.
So what advice do you give to, or would you give to students who are considering going into engineering or interested in machine learning? What background would they need to have to pursue this kind of thing? And we talked a little bit about the attitude, just being passionate
right.
about it.
So backgrounds for machine learning, at least, probability and statistics, linear algebra, and programming. So being very proficient at those are kind of the baseline skills. I would say consider to be a lot more narrow. So now, AI used to be kind of a, 20 years ago maybe, was a smaller field in which you could kind of know all of it. Now
right.
it's this massive field. So don't try to, I would encourage students to think a lot more narrow in terms of problems they might be interested in solving. You're not going to beat Google's pre-trained models or something.
Right.
So, but try to be excited about a very small problem, I guess, is because you can get really overwhelmed by the deluge of research on AI. I mean, even I have a lot of trouble even staying up with my very narrow subfields because
right.
it's just growing, continuing to grow, and just a lot of interest from all the aspects. So try to it's more interesting to go deep into one thing. If you're interested,
right.
it'd be better to find something that you're interested in and unique and go deep into that than try to be super broad.
Right.
Because you'll just get kind of lost.
Well, from my perspective, too, as someone who writes about this stuff, even 5 years ago, if they were talking about AI, it was coming out of engineering or computer science. Now there's an AI story every single day, and sometimes it's coming out of liberal arts, sometimes it's coming out of the business school. It's in all areas now. So I know you spend a lot of time working and on your research and with your students. When you're not working, what kind of things do you do to just unwind and have fun?
Right. So my life is centered around my faith in Jesus Christ. So that shapes my work and everything I do. And so what that means in practice is when I'm not working, I'm often with my family trying to engage with them and love them. And otherwise also at church doing Bible studies or going there. That's probably where I have the most time of refreshment is to be with other believers in Christ. And so
do you have kids?
I do have two kids. I have a 2.5-year-old and about a 4-month-old girl.
Oh, wow. So that's a lot of work, too.
Yeah.
Would you want them to follow your path into engineering? And how would you know when they're young, if maybe they have that bent towards engineering?
Sure. I'd be happy if they did. I wouldn't... I wouldn't specifically push them to necessarily. Right. I think their character is more important than their specific field. Yeah. So I would care a lot more about what their character is and what God is calling them to. And if that's engineering professor, then I'm happy to support that. And if it's something totally different, yep, I'm happy to support that.
So thanks so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed our conversation about machine learning, and good luck in all your research.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me.
That brings us to the end of today's episode of Engineering Innovations with Dr. David Inouye. He's a professor here at Purdue University. Thanks so much to you, the listener, for tuning in. If you found this conversation as inspiring as I did, be sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and share this episode with others who might be interested in the future of technology and machine learning. And to stay updated on upcoming episodes and to explore more about Purdue ECE, you can visit our website at purdue.edu/ECE. Follow us on all the socials. We're on Facebook, X, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can check the show notes for links and more information. And we'll be back in another month with a new episode.